Another episode of Nevada Backcountry coming up. Thanks for joining David and I this weekend. Today we're going to get into the nutrition aspect of backcountry hunting. We'll talk about the infamous Mountain House gut brick. Then we'll have a special guest, Dr. James McLennan from Advanced Medical Arts here in Reno. He's an avid backcountry hunter, so David and I will pick his brain when it comes to being safe, being smart, and being medically prepared in the backcountry. Right off the bat, David, I wanted to bring this up. I got an email this morning at 3 a.m. actually from NDAO. Apparently, they have to make a clarification to hunter education requirements that went out. I guess there was an email with the big game tag application season coming up. They wanted to clarify regs as far as hunter education requirement in Nevada.
If you're 18 and younger, you have to have an in-person component. And if you're older than that, you can do the entire course online.
And I think the mix-up was they had said something about doing it online in the big game application thing.
Yeah, a week or so ago, the Department of Wildlife had sent out a email blast or a Facebook blast in relation to that the hunt book is now online. You can go check it out online. And some of that language is in the book. And it was basically stating what you just stated, that the complete course is available online. Department of Wildlife had to make a clarification that actually there's a component of that class that has to be done in person if you are 18 or younger.
Right. So for those of you listening at home, if you have a youth hunter, a new youth hunter, they do need to take the written test in person. They can't just do the online thing.
Correct.
Okay.
And realistically, it's the in-person course. You'll get a lot more out of that in-person course than just the online course. I've seen that. I've experienced it. It's just a better course.
I'd completely agree with you. Back when I took it in person, and then I've seen the online component with my younger daughter when she was going through it. And there was an entire section. It's not a bad course by any stretch of the imagination. It's good. But there were things in there, you know, there was a test on like parts of a revolver and some of that stuff where I feel like an in-person course, they can really focus on the hunting aspect, the ethical aspect.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
When I took it back in the early 80s, so kind of letting you all know probably about how old I am.
You've outed yourself,
yeah, I
David.
Just outed myself. It was all, obviously there was no online back then, but it was a full weekend course. And then the last part of the course, the instructors took the class out to the shooting range and we had to qualify.
Oh, there was like an NRA component almost to it.
Well, I'm not sure if it was NRA supported or not, but it was the instructors took us out. We were out off of Pyramid Highway, and we had to shoot a .22. I remember shooting like a .257 Roberts and a shotgun. So
okay.
we had to show proper safety techniques with those weapons, kind of went through the things that we had learned in the classroom, and then we had to apply that in the field, actually holding a weapon and at times a loaded weapon. And then there was another section where we followed a blood trail. You know, the proposed to the downed animal.
Oh, so man, they made that's up way more in depth.
Yeah, they made up a little blood trail and you had to follow it as if you had shot something and it ran off. And now you had to do your due diligence to harvest and to retrieve that animal.
All out myself. When I went through in the 90s, that didn't exist. The shooting component didn't exist. It was, I don't remember, to be quite honest, if it was a weekend or a one-day thing. I can't really remember that, but I know there was no shooting component, and there certainly was no blood trailing component to it.
Well, that was the 90s. That's when you guys were all like getting soft, all slim, shady.
Yeah. I don't know. That whole thing was lost on me, so yeah. Go figure. Hey, so moving on from that little bit of housekeeping to do to make sure everybody is as informed as possible, we wanted to jump into dehydrated foods for backcountry hunts. And we talked a little bit about this off air. There was a consensus. You and I have kind of a similar opinion when it comes to this stuff. I was going to just flat out out companies right off the bat. Stuff I've used that works, stuff I have used that didn't work as well. The five that I've used, for those not aware, when we're talking dehydrated foods, like the prepper foods, Backpacker's Pantry, Mountain House being the ubiquitous one.
Yeah, Peak.
Peak is another. The five I have used, and I will rank them from most gut-friendly to least gut-friendly, would be Heather's Choice out of Alaska. I haven't analyzed the back of the bag, but I think hers are about the healthiest. They're certainly the easiest on me. Then I would go to like a Nomad Nutrition, then a Peak Fuel, then Backpacker's Pantry, then the OG, the one everybody knows, Mountain House. And the reason I rank them that way is, man, if you're on one of these 6-7 day backpacking trips or backcountry hunts, boy, by about day 3 or 4, that Mountain House is sitting heavy in you and it's starting to hurt.
Yeah, I have the same experience, and that's about the same categories for me. I've actually tried one a friend gave me that he has an individual, and I don't know who the person, I don't know the person's name, but they make their own. They have the machine and they make their own, and it is that by far 100% blows all of those other ones out of the water. There
right.
was no issues with it, no stomach issue, no, there wasn't 1,100 milligrams of sodium. It was, they were exceptional. But yes, some of those there, when you get into those really high sodium levels, and you got to remember, read the back of those things. Some of those things are like 4 servings in a pouch.
Right,
and
right.
The serving will tell you it's 900 milligrams. Well, that's 3,600 milligrams if you eat the whole pouch, which most of us do when you're
yep.
hiking around all day. You're like, oh, it's grub time. And then it's like a cork.
It's a cork, and there's the salt, I call it salt foot.
Oh my God.
I always know when I've ingested way too much Mountain House, because I'll wake up in the morning, I do my normal routine, kind of stretch whatever in my tent or underneath my shelter, and then going to put boots on.
Oh man.
It ain't working.
No.
It's trying to fit your, and I always know
hands?
For whatever reason, hands too, yeah. For
yeah.
whatever reason, it just, salt affects me like that, and I'd say I'm a pretty fit guy. I eat healthy. I live fairly healthy. But for whatever reason, 3-4 days of that stuff, and my feet start swelling up, my hands start swelling up.
Well,
so
it gives
yeah.
you a headache. It can give you a headache, especially if you're not drinking enough water during the day or getting proper hydration,
yep.
you know, with electrolytes and stuff. If you're not doing that and you're taking in a lot of that sodium from these pouches, from these dehydrated foods, you start getting headaches and you just start feeling lethargic and just absolute like junk. So, you know, we want to pose this question to everybody out there listening to us. We would love to have your opinion on maybe one that you were using. Henry didn't mention that you're like, hey man, I've used this one. It's awesome. Or if you have somebody that does make them themselves, give us some info on that. You know, we'd really like to know so that we can get some of this information out there. It would be nice to know that the food that I'm going to be eating isn't going to wreck me by the time I get back to my rig.
David has graciously donated a year of the Mountain Tough Plus package. So for one lucky listener, you're going to get an entire year of every product that Mountain Tough makes, from their kettlebell programs, bodyweight programs, heavy pack programs,
nutrition.
All you guys have got to do is like, subscribe on Facebook, leave us a comment. You are automatically entered to win the full Mountain Tough Plus program, courtesy of David Catalano. So stay tuned. Coming up after the break, we'll have a special guest, Dr. James McLennan. We will also pick his brain on some of the freeze-dried foods, backpacking foods. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. All right, everybody, we've got a special guest for these segments, a friend of mine, Dr. James McLennan. He works over at Advanced Medical Arts in Reno. Jamie, is it cool if I call you Jamie instead of Dr. McLennan?
That is absolutely fine, Henry.
Okay, perfect. Jamie is a throwback to the old school mountain hardman days. I've hunted with him, I've climbed with him, I've skied with him. Former college cyclist, avid skier, avid climber, avid hunter. We got Jamie to come on the show today to talk a little bit about wilderness medicine, some of the stuff that he's seen in his time out in the woods, making sure you are prepared before you go out into the backcountry, setting up a wilderness first aid kit, injury prevention. We're going to touch a little bit on nutritional stuff in the backcountry as well. And then, as always, I'll try to pin him down on some of his honey holes and where he plans on hunting this upcoming season. Dr. McLennan, James, Jimmy, Jamie, glad to have you on the show.
Well, it's nice to be on the show, and it's nice to discuss these things with you here. So,
yeah, first and foremost, why don't you touch on setting up a wilderness first aid kit? I know there are a lot of options out there for people, kind of a pre-packaged thing. As you know, I've bounced ideas off you in the past, but those kind of one-size-fits-all kits, they never cover everything. What are some of the things you recommend people take into the backcountry from a first aid perspective?
Yeah, so I've used plenty of the first aid kits that you buy at Walmart, CVS, Cabela's, and I've had the same experience that you've had where you need something, you don't have it. And I really think it depends on what you're looking to do. If you're going out into, say, an expedition, say up to Alaska to do a big game hunt, obviously I would recommend looking at the terrain that you're going to be in. If you're going to be in steep, snowy terrain, you're going to need to be prepared for that stuff. But for a basic first aid kit, I think, you know, some fundamentals, obviously Band-Aids, ibuprofen, Tylenol, and having a decent amount of some form of gauze. And the best place to get the gauze is just over the counter at the pharmacy. And I like the cloth knit-based gauze just because it's more versatile. You can use it for cleaning wounds. You can use it for packing wounds. A little bit can go a long way compared to just using standard Band-Aids. And then two, I think part of your first aid kit should also be developed based off of your, you know, chronic diseases that you have. I think we have a lot of people in the state of Nevada, all ages that like to hunt. Some are very young, very athletic, very healthy, don't have any chronic conditions. But then we have a lot of middle-aged folks and older adults that, you know, have maybe diabetes, may have high blood pressure or other cardiovascular diseases. And I think you need to kind of sit down and think about those conditions and having a plan for building your own first aid kit. So for me, when I look at building my own first aid kit for the activities that I do, I typically have some ibuprofen, Tylenol, Band-Aids, super glue, gauze, and an ACE bandage as well. Not Coban. You can use Coban, but I don't particularly like it for several reasons, and we can get into that later. The other recommendation that I would have is having some suturing equipment. And me, since I'm a physician, it's easy for me to get these things, but also having some basic lidocaine for laceration. I think those are the most common injuries that I see that I've had happen to myself and also that I've had happen to friends when we're in a rush to pack out an animal in the middle of the night, a little slip of the knife, and you get a big gash in the finger. So having that type of equipment on hand is beneficial. And for the most part, a small suturing kit is pretty lightweight, so it doesn't take up much pack space.
You brought up ibuprofen. That was going to be one of the questions. David and I were just talking about this, the gut issues that both of us have experienced on these longer, when you start getting into that 6, 7, 8 day range for backpack hunts, one of the things I do to sleep comfortably, I always bring like a Motrin PM, an ibuprofen nighttime type medication. I take that before I go to bed. Are there any other better options? By that fourth or fifth day of taking Motrin PM, there are no polite descriptions of what starts coming out of me. So what are some of the options that maybe don't cause you to sprint for the nearest tree line after the fourth day to sleep comfortably in the backcountry?
Yeah, so that's a great question here. Ibuprofen specifically, but it's a good anti-inflammatory. It works good for acute swelling, acute injuries, muscle pains, and soreness. However, it can be very hard on, especially if you're taking, you know, Motrin PM, which is ibuprofen with a lot of hydramine or doxalamine, which is basically a potent antihistamine. That if you're just using it for a little bit of soreness and try to get a good night's sleep, I think it would be a better option to either use Tylenol PM, which is just acetaminophen with doxalamine or diphenhydramine. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that would probably be a better bet to use, especially if you have underlying issues, heartburn, history of gastritis or gastric ulcers. That would be a far better bet. It's much more gentler on the GI tract.
Absolutely. So a Tylenol PM, not a Motrin or an ibuprofen-based nighttime medication.
Yep, for sleep there. Now, so say if you're out in the wilderness and you twist and you roll your ankle, well, it's pretty swollen. Well, at that point in time, you know, you have to typically use pretty high doses of Tylenol to get an anti-inflammatory effect. Typically, you have to use about 1,000 milligrams three times a day of the Tylenol. Ibuprofen has much better anti-inflammatory effect rather than a antipyretic effect, meaning for reducing fevers. Tylenol, I would say, won't really touch that acute injury unless you're using very high doses of Tylenol.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, and two, I mean, there's a lot of over-the-counter sleep aids. So if you need something for sleep, just having, you know, 25 milligrams of Benadryl or getting Unisom over-the-counter, which is otherwise known as doxalamine, you can take that, and that can significantly help aid in just getting you to sleep.
Kind of on that note of that uncomfortable feeling sometimes when you're out in the, you know, when you're out in the backcountry and you're kind of feeling not 100%, at what point in time in your experience or your profession would you state that, what's the threshold, like, hey, you need to just get off the mountain?
So I think that's a really difficult question to answer because we all have different experiences and different level of experience, and the best teacher is experience alone, in my opinion, when it comes to doing things in the great outdoors. And one of the things that I would say is a good indicator, regardless of experience, is that uncomfortable, even uneasy feeling that you may have. Maybe it's the hairs on the back of the neck are kind of prickling, or just like, I'm not sure I should be in this situation. I would listen to that. But like I said, it's really, you know, case specific. And I can give you an example of when I was younger out in college, a group of my buddies, we left and we were in the Seven Trough area doing chukar hunting. And me and my brother and a friend, Zach, got turned around and got disoriented and kind of getting back to the truck. And as a result of that, it started getting dark. I was underprepared. I didn't have any food. I left my jacket in the car, and the temperatures were dropping down really fast, and we didn't have any flashlights. And I'm sure a lot of people have been in this, and we were in really nasty, rocky terrain, and we had to come up with a decision of, well, do we try to wander in the dark trying to get back to the truck, or do we try to make a shelter in place? And then hopefully our buddies would be smart enough to come back for us because we didn't arrive at the truck, and they would come out and do a search party for us. So there was a little bit of a mild argument, and we finally came to an agreement of making a shelter. I think it was the best thing to do. We were able to stay warm. We had a fire. So it really depends on the situation, and that's just kind of an example where you really have to trust your intuition, and I think we got to get out of this mindset of keep pushing, keep moving forward, no pain, no gain, because a lot of times that will save us, and it's a fine line, and I think Henry can speak of that based off of his experience of hunting and climbing and being in precarious situations.
Stay tuned to Nevada Backcountry. After the break here, we'll continue the discussion with Dr. James McLennan on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Back to David's question. I understand, yeah, that can be a tough one to answer as far as like, well, I don't feel great. My stomach's in knots. Yeah, probably keep hunting. But like you said, there's the intuition component of I know me, I know my body. I know where that kind of threshold is, and that's going to differ person to person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a difficult question. And two, also your experience level too. If you're not experienced and you're out there by yourself, chucker hunting maybe a few times with buddies, and now you're going out alone by yourself. Well, you know, you have an odd feeling. Maybe you need to listen to that. Maybe you need to head back. But yeah.
Kind of along those lines as well, as, you know, in today's technological world, there are plenty of folks that feel, well, I don't really need to carry any extra stuff. I don't need a first aid kit or anything because I have my cell phone, or I have a spot unit, or I have a sat phone or whatever. Those items are really for extreme situations. In my opinion, you should still, no matter what, by total default, you should always carry equipment to keep yourself safe, protected, and from going into, you know, potential shock situation. And then the phone or spot or satellite phone is the emergency contact to get somebody to you to rescue you. You don't use that as your only form of, in a sense, first aid or come get me technique.
No, I would agree with that absolutely. I mean, I use an InReach by Garmin, and you know, it has live tracking that it can share. You can, you know, do text messages and things of that nature. Do I use it all the time? No. Do I have it on? Yes. But then technology fails too. And there are areas in certain areas where sometimes that satellite stuff, you cannot connect to a satellite. That message is just pinging out there. And it may not work in that specific situation that you're in. And then you need to rely on yourself, your own intuition, and have a sense of survival.
In your experience, do you feel like anybody that spends a fair amount of time in the backcountry or just even recreationally hiking about on designated trail systems, anything where you're going to be a fair distance away from, say, medical assistance, do you think folks should take one of those wilderness first aid courses to have that general understanding?
Yeah, I mean, where we live, there's trails all over the place. It's close by. We got pretty good cell phone service. And I think a lot of us that go out and recreate just for fun, going for a hike, maybe going for a trail run, or even just like a short day trip out for, you know, a chucker hunt. You know, I think it would be a good idea. I think health awareness is really important. Obviously, I think just a plain old introductory course into wilderness medicine or basic life support could be a benefit. Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's all kinds of great resources out there, and I had the opportunity to do the Knowles Wilderness Medicine Program, and it was a great experience. And obviously, you have to have time and you have to have money in order to do that. But I think the basics there is, okay, you know, it's just like getting in your car. all right, you're driving around, there's always a possibility of, you know, accidentally running a red light, you know, not paying attention, getting sidetracked. And the point being is, even when we're going out into the wilderness, we need to be just alert and ready and think, well, what happens if on this trail run I accidentally slip and roll my ankle? Or what if I break my ankle? What am I going to do in that situation? The likelihood of it happening is not really high, but just thinking about it and being prepared and having some sort of action plan could potentially be very, very life-saving. And, you know, sometimes we forget cell phones. So you need to think ahead. Thinking ahead and planning is really the basic step of survival, in my opinion. Then, depending on financial resources and the hobbies that you do, get yourself educated and start doing, you know, training. There's great online resources. You can look into Knowles. They have survivor's guides that you can buy at REI that are really just the basic bare minimal stuff that you need to know to get yourself out of a bind.
Yeah, because there's a lot of free online basic wilderness medicine and wilderness first aid courses that are available, and they're very informative. They're pretty solid courses, so I mean those are out there as well. But like you said, if you want to get really into it, you got to figure out the time, dedication, and the finances to complete those courses.
Yeah, I mean they're great, but there's a great and I don't have any specifically that I would recommend off the top of my head. There's a lot of resources online that you can use, and I'm sure Henry has a list that he can post on the website. You know, just speaking in the medical field, traumas in general, things happen when people are doing everyday things, and it's because we're not paying attention and we're not fully alert. The same thing happens in the wilderness. We're tired, we're fatigued, we're not paying attention, we slip, we roll our ankle, or we get a fracture, or we fall, we bang our shoulder up, and that just kind of life. The essence that I'm trying to get at here is if you stay alert and plan and you are prepared, I think the chances of things going awry are less. In my experience, when I've been in precarious situations, I'm always underprepared. Every time I'm prepared and I've done my homework, I got all my stuff that I need, appropriately what I need, and not, you know, just stacking up and filling up the truck with all kinds of stuff for no reason. I think that the basic of being ready and prepared really will help prevent things from happening.
Hey, Jamie, speak for yourself, because I live in a safety bubble and I've never sent you a middle of the night text saying, hey, yo, my toe's pointing in the wrong direction. What do I do?
No, absolutely. I'm just, you know, when I used to do shifts in the emergency room, it's like, oh, how'd you break your ankle? What happened? Oh, I was walking the dog and I fell off the curb, or I was taking the trash out and slipped on ice. It's just doing every daily activity where people get hurt. And obviously in the wilderness here, specifically speaking hunting, I think most commonly injuries that you're going to see: rolling ankles, falling down, muscle bruises, contusions, joint aches, headache, everyday type of things that we experience. But then, too, you also need to be prepared for what happens if people are walking around with sometimes, you know, loaded guns. People
get absolutely
shot out in the wilderness. And those are the situations that I think people need to have in their minds, because does it happen very often? No, but if it does happen, how are you going to deal with the situation? And, you know, knowing the bare basic, if somebody has a massive bleed and you have your first aid kit in your backpack, one of the best things you can have to prevent somebody from bleeding to death if they hit a major artery is a basic tourniquet that you can tourniquet somebody's arm down to prevent somebody from bleeding to death, to allow you to get time to get help and to get that person evacuated.
On that note, what's the medical take? Two things that I always put in my first aid kit. couple tampons, as silly as it may sound, but a couple tampons and thing of quick clot. For those unfamiliar with that, you could Google it, but it basically has a component. There's a powder in it or whatever. It's essentially a cauterizing compound. What is your medical take on that?
No, I think, I mean, tampons are great for bad nosebleeds. When I used to play soccer, our coach used to have them in his first aid kit. The other material that you're talking about, it works great. Now, can you use it on all kinds of wounds? Absolutely not. But if you don't have access to a suturing kit and you have a large laceration in your finger, you can certainly put that over it and apply pressure to it, and it can help slow the bleeding and give you time to get out and get the appropriate medical treatment.
Yeah, so I like absolutely. That stuff. What about, so not for tampons, not for a puncture wound?
No, I wouldn't use a puncture room. I mean, if you have a severe bleeding puncture wound, so you accidentally trip and fall and you get impaled by a
stick or something
in your leg with a stick and it's in there, and you can debate whether to pull it out or not. Sometimes you can pull it out and you could cause more trauma. But say you fell and it lacerated and you're bleeding deep, the best thing to do is to get a tourniquet and then apply direct pressure and hold direct pressure just to slow the blood loss. The tampons there, I wouldn't insert them into the wound. I don't think they're really going to put them in there. They're going to soak up. They're going to fill up. But you need pressure. Direct pressure on the artery that's bleeding is going to help slow blood loss.
Well, you heard it here first. If you're going out into the backcountry, don't bring tampons.
I didn't say don't bring tampons. I just said
okay.
You may need to, depending on who you're going with. If you're going hunting with Henry, I would recommend bringing tampons.
That's a fact, buddy.
You may need them.
After the break here, we will wrap up our discussion with Dr. James McLennan. Thanks to Outwest Buildings for sponsoring the show. Remember, coming up at 11 is Tom Gresham's Gun Talk on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, thanks to our show sponsor, Outwest Buildings in Fallon. Look, if you're anything like me, you've gotten the enough is enough speech from your significant other. Before you go out and do something foolish this season, get in touch with my guy, Irvin. He's got plenty of man cave options to protect those priceless mounts and might even help save your marriage along the way. Just go to OutwestBuildings.com. Outwest Buildings doesn't build sheds. They solve space problems. Now switching gears, I was going to do my typical hunting thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Jamie, where are you putting in for?
Yes, sir.
What plans you got this season?
Where am I putting in for?
What units do you like?
And what weapon are you going to use?
Oh, what weapon? Well, I like archery. So I have a compound bow. It's an old Bowtech Diamond. I've had it for a number of years. They still shoot it. The unit here that I would like to go to is, I can't remember the unit, but it's just outside of Ely. I want to get an archery elk tag.
Oh, 111 through 115?
Yep, 111 through 115. Yep, that's where I want to go. And if I draw an archery elk, that's where I would
be. Did Johnny take his cow out of there last year with a bow?
Yeah, my brother got a cow out there last year.
That's David's arch nemesis, cow elk. For some reason, that's the one that just gets him in his getter every year. So, yeah, Jamie's brother got his cow with a bow out there, 111, 115 last year.
Man, someday.
Yeah, and then I haven't been out there, but one of the first, it was a rifle. I was young. I did a rifle elk hunt out in the Drawbridge area. I would love to go back to that area. I know that it's been hit hard in the last couple of years with some fires, but I'd like to go back out in that area.
Yeah, it should be a good year this year in that, well, all across Nevada, really, for nice, solid green up, some really good moisture that we're getting across the entire state. Hopefully we'll have some really, really nice green up and some good antler growth.
Oh, absolutely. I think with the moisture that we're getting, I think it will be good. I hope that the mule deer population picks up.
Yeah, all in due time.
Last couple of, all in due time. Last, I didn't go this year, but I went 2 years ago, and we were out in 06-2, and a lot of hard hunting, spent a lot of time glassing and looking, and finally found a group of like 5 or 6 bucks that were good size, but just it took about a week to try to fight them.
I don't want to badmouth a unit because the Big Six is cool. But I was just out there last year. A friend's dad had a rifle buck tag there. And compared to historically what you saw out there, he wound up just taking a meat buck. And it was like, all right, we're going home. But there's an area there in 06-2 that's kind of notorious for producing big deer.
Mm-hmm.
I just did not see.
Yeah, that sometimes just comes down to timing. Realistically,
true.
Man, there are big bucks in just about every unit if you've got the time and energy to dedicate to it. But me, you know what? Those younger bucks sure taste a lot better. I don't mind pursuing a nice
meat buck,
old fork and horn or 4x3 or something, you know. I just know once it's on the ground, I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy is going to taste wonderful.
I would agree with you about the taste there, but I think I try to take the philosophy of let the young live a little bit longer.
Oh, look, that's so altruistic of you, Jamie.
Oh, that is. Yeah.
Oh, I just have to say that.
Some of the dehydrated foods that a lot of us will take into the backcountry, what level of sodium do you feel is safe when you're in the backcountry? Say you're on a 5, 6, 7 day hunt.
To answer that question there, I when I was younger and I'd go out hunting with my dad, we would always, you know, bring a cooler with food and cook breakfast and then cook dinner. And due to time and access, I've become more of a fan of the dehydrated food. And my take on it is, if you're just going out and you're not working and you're not sweating and you're just road hunting and you're eating 2 large high sodium meals a day, that's probably not going to do you any good. That's probably, 4,000 milligrams of sodium that you may be intaking. And if you have underlying health conditions of hypertension or congestive heart failure and you're older, well, that can cause a lot of problems, to put it simply. But I know just from experience, when I go out archery hunting, you know, I may have a pot of coffee. That's me. I drink a lot of coffee. A pot of coffee before I get ready to go at 4 o'clock in the morning. Maybe like an apple or a piece of fruit, and then hunting hard all day long, and then get back to camp, or if we're backpacking, get a meal. And if it's in the summertime, that's fine. That amount of sodium, you lose so much sodium when you're sweating that it's not going to be problematic.
Oh, okay.
Really, it's going to be dependent upon your chronic, your kidney diseases, what your chronic diseases are. And if you're, 40 or even 30 and you have hypertension or chronic kidney disease or, heart disease, simple question when you see your doctor the next time is being like, hey, I'm planning this trip over here. What do you think about this? It's going to hurt me in any way. And that way it could be more tailored to the individual. But for people that are like myself, I'm 37 at this time. And I think Henry's around the same age that I am.
Yep.
We don't have any major medical problems. We're in good physical health and have a pretty good fitness level. When you're running around in the hills all day and you're sweating profusely and you're baking in the sun, you're going to need to eat that meal, but also you're going to need to make sure that you're getting adequate hydration as well. And it's really going to have no impact. But would I recommend eating those meals 3 times a day? No. You're going to have headache.
Oh,
heart's going to be pounding. Your legs are going to start to swell and you're going to feel just nasty.
Yeah.
There are some parts of Nevada, too, where you are kind of threading the needle with water and a water source. I'm kind of like you, Jamie. I always think, okay, if I'm sweating enough, I'm drinking enough water, I'm getting this sodium out of my system, I'm okay. But I know I've been on those hunts before where you're counting on a spring or you're counting on this level of snowpack, and you get out there and you go, okay, let me reassess my water consumption and reassess how hard I'm going to push it. And I know that's where I've done that. The Mountain House thing probably overdid it with my sodium intake and was not a happy camper.
I mean, one of the things is you also need electrolytes. I mean, sodium is one form of electrolytes, but you need potassium, magnesium, and things of that nature. And one of the things that I would recommend, and one of the products that I like to use. You can get it at Walmart. You can order it online. They sell it at Costco. That's just liquid IV because it has, one, it tastes good. It has a little bit of sugar. It has a lot of electrolytes. And then it's a pretty well, what we call a more of a hypotonic solution, more natural, similar to how the fluid in our body is or in the blood. So like Henry's saying, if you're super dehydrated and you have one of those, if you get too much sodium and you don't have enough water and other electrolytes, well, yeah, you could start getting stomach cramps, headaches, and just feel off. And one, I'd make sure that you're drinking adequate water. And then two, you know, maybe get some electrolyte replacement, whether it be Liquid IV or some of the other brands that are marketed out there. Stuff is helpful.
Jamie, can't thank you enough, man.
You owe me a backcountry ski trip, Henry.
I know, man. I was so sore after that last trip. That was brutal, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing, too, just for a future topic here, is just general fitness.
And getting that was our show last week?
And things
2 weeks
that.
Ago. So, 2 weeks. Yeah, we did a show on that a couple weeks ago. I don't think David and I didn't talk about this, but yeah, Jamie's the guy I bounce all my harebrained stuff off of, you know, with the competitive college cycling background, alpine climbing background, all that stuff. Jamie's my go-to for like, hey, does this make biological sense? Should I do this way?
I overdo it all the time. I mean, and I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's fine, though. That's good for you, though. I mean,
The
body
definitely
needs to move, and the more you're staying active there, but the appropriate training is important. You need structured training.
Yes.
Your fitness levels will improve no matter what age you are. And like I said, that old phrase that a lot of people use, no pain, no gain.
Not when you're 55.
That leads to a lot of overtraining, overuse injuries, and you know, sometimes more is not better.
I would have you back on for the endurance stuff. Jamie picked apart my kind of endurance and pointed out where I was completely going wrong. So
yeah, a little bit.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, not a problem.
Look, I'm serious about this. When I showed up with another mule deer mount, I got a blank stare and a finger pointed at the door. Not going to mention which finger either. Go to outwestbuildings.com and check out their man cave options. From reloading sheds to full-blown man cave trophy rooms, Irvin at Out West will hook you up. Get that junk out of the garage or living room just by going to outwestbuildings.com. Thanks to Outwest Buildings for sponsoring the show. Remember, coming up at 11 is Tom Gresham's Gun Talk, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.